Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on 7/29, the end of July. We're almost through with this month and we're going to begin another month.
How exciting. You like the beginning of the month better or the end of the month? Or are you kind of a middle of the sandwich guy in the middle?
I've always been a sandwich guy.
Always. I've had some good sandwiches lately. I had this sandwich the other day that must have weighed about 7 pounds.
Huh, it sounds like a mission burrito.
It was delicious. Absolutely delicious. Well, lots going on in the markets. We have, of course, we're in the center of earnings season. We had last week an incredible number of companies that had actually reported. As a matter of fact, on last Thursday, it was like 10% of the S&P 500 on that day only. Incredible amount of stocks. This week is also pretty big. A lot of things happening. Last week we saw, you see what happened with Facebook?
No, I didn't actually.
So Facebook put out their earnings and they beat and they did much better. Advertising's up, mobile's up. Mobile is a bigger part of the overall revenue stream, which is everybody's been looking for. Something very important.
Yeah, but they've been talking a big game about mobile for a long time.
Yeah. But they finally have been pulling it out. But the thing is that if you looked inside of the metrics of the user growth and some of the other things that usually were important, they didn't do so well. But meanwhile, Facebook hit an all-time high, and stocks have been doing pretty well since. And this gave a lot of support for the hopes that the other social media stocks would do well. And this is on the heels, if you remember, last month when Janet Yellen said, hey, you know what, small caps are kind of overdone, and the crazy valuations of social media stocks, some of the small cap social media stocks, as well as the biotechs, is having the Fed concerned. Meanwhile, biotechs have been on fire. They've been doing great in terms of earnings. And then you have new companies coming out with all sorts of new things. Last week, you talked about that potential cure for breast cancer. Remember that?
Yep.
And this week, there were some other companies. One of the ones we have is Pharmacilicus. No, that's not it. Anyway, PCYC is a symbol. I have a problem saying the name of the company. But anyway, this company is actually doing very well. Came out with some new drugs also. But this is just a series of developments that's happening in the space of biotech. And then we saw, of course, Twitter posting results tonight after the bell. They have good user growth. They hit some real nice numbers in terms of total users, and their advertising is up. You know how far the stock ramped up after hours?
Yeah, apparently took off like a rocket.
Yep, up 30%. Now, a lot of that is...
Let me just try to guess why that would be.
Yeah.
Now, tell me if I'm right or wrong, because they turned a profit. They're actually making money hand over fist.
Well, that's one of the things. They actually did better than expectations. The other thing is about 1.5 to 2 days worth of short interest there. So when you start getting that stock moving pretty hard, the shorts get squeezed and you got to run for the hills very quickly. But there was, 60 or 70 million shares traded today of that stock.
So it's a profitable money-making operation.
Yeah. That is the fact. Why are you saying that twice?
I don't know.
Is there a reason?
I think they can make a nickel, to be honest about it.
Well, they did better. We saw that the top end was probably close to about 52.85. We actually had a short limit set there at 52.85, which is clearly the top end of the current, we'll call it not a channel, but the resistance point. And I'll probably look to short that at about that number, actually.
What number are you looking at for shorting?
52.85. Mm-hmm. 53, a round number. Why? They did post better numbers, and I think that they do have more users. And clearly, one of the things that has me a little concerned is that there's a lot of advertisers chasing this new media, the social media. And the question really remains, is it effective? And I think that they're going to try their best initially, especially if many of these companies are doing well, to throw some money at the social media to see if, hey, maybe this is an outlet where we can get more business from. And when they finally find out that maybe it's not the greatest use of their money, they may start pulling back. But with Twitter, everybody wants to be on the newest and the greatest, and the Facebook has done well and Twitter is doing better. But still, I still question the long-term nature of benefit from Twitter advertising in terms of the ability for advertisers to get business from it. So we'll have to see.
Well, my experience, and I've been a Twitter user since the early days, I got on that one, is that the effectiveness of, let me just, here's my anecdote. I'll tell it again. I tell it all the time. I have about just under 100,000 followers. When I had 10,000 followers, and I was one of the top people at the time before all the celebrities came on board and showed us how it's done, I would send out a tweet about something to say, hey, go look at this, go look at that. And I would keep tabs on it through various systems. Mm-hmm. In other words, I could see who was going to click, right? And so when I had 10,000 followers, I would point something out, and I would get between 1,500 and 3,500 people that would pay attention to the tweet and actually go click on something.
Wow, that's impressive.
That's very impressive. And now I have almost 100,000, and I would do this. I can do the same thing. I can send a message, go tweet out, check this out, check that out, and I keep tabs on them. And whereas before I got 1,500 to 3,000 people for 3,000 being the very high, for 10,000 followers, now I get about 150.
Well, it's diluted. I mean, everybody knows what it is right now, and everybody knows now the difference. It's the same thing with any of these blogging platforms when it was new and when it was information that was being, sent around and people wanted to follow and figure out what was going on. And there wasn't a lot of people pushing various, not a lot of people, but a lot of the breadth of the amount of people pushing stuff. If you were to click all the things that people would push at you all day, you would have no time.
Right.
You know?
But it's the kind of effect you have compared to when it began is just, it's below what you would get from mediocre and maybe even incompetent direct mail. Yeah. I mean, if you're the worst direct mail guy in the world, you don't know what you're doing. You got the return address is wrong. Everything. It's still better than what you're going to get on Twitter.
It's interesting. I don't usually do anything with direct mail, but there was a time recently when I was doing a move that I got a flood of these cards from movers. I said, all right, what the heck? I'll check them out. So I grabbed them all and they came in droves. These large postcards. And yeah. I called a few of them, and that was fine. It was funny because one of them I called, they said, oh, sorry, we don't do moving in your area. I'm like, well, why would you send me something then? What's the point of that? But they did say, well, we can refer you to other movers. I said, really? Yeah, that's what we do. We want to make sure you're taken care of. I'm thinking, why would they care if I'm taken care of? But they gave me all these names. Now, here's the punchline. I'm thinking to myself, okay, they must be getting a spiff on this or something, right?
Oh, yeah. I have to.
Somehow, they must be getting paid. But I'm thinking to myself, if I call this mover they gave me, how are they going to know that I referred them or they referred me?
Yeah.
I started thinking about this, right? Well, lo and behold, here's the way. I got a call yesterday. Hi, it's blah, blah from Continental Moving or whatever it was. Want to know a couple of the people that we sent you how things are going with them. I'm like, oh, I moved already. They said, you moved already? I said, yes. Did you move using one of the people that we had recommended? I said, no. But that's obviously the only way. Think about that. A lot could fall through the cracks there.
Well, if that's the way they do it, that sucks.
Yeah,
that's
stupid.
Not very, very efficient at all.
Right, exactly.
I mean, generally speaking, it would be done with a code. And the way you would do that is you'd say, I would like to, we have a special offer. You can get 5% off, make it 5%, because people take 5%. Take a 5% off if you refer to us.
Right.
And then they split a 10% deal, who knows, or whatever, 20%. You don't know what the sales fee is. But you can do it that way, and that's pretty effective. And then because the person like yourself will take the 5%.
Yeah. Person like myself, what do you mean? What do you say? What do you say?
A cheap bastard like yourself, you're going to take the 5%.
Right.
I mean, anybody would. What would you throw it away? Right. What I'm saying?
Right. No, I hear you. So anyway, that I thought was, that's the classic old time way of referral marketing, and they hopefully going to get something from that. But anyway, let's continue on with earnings season. Like I said, we're seeing that EPS is beating on many, many companies. About 66%, 67% are beating. Revenues are coming in better. Did you see Amazon? General disgust with Amazon. Amazon comes in with a much greater loss than anticipated, which was really interesting because in their last quarterly numbers, they came out and gave guidance, and they said that, you know what, we think we're going to have a big loss next quarter. As a matter of fact, it was upwards of about $500 million. I remember seeing this. I'm like, wow. Remember, we talked about this.
Yes, right. They were bragging about it.
Yeah. He said, you know, watch this. You know, we could lose as much as a small country. And meanwhile, you know, the stock wasn't really hit hard. In fact, you know, it was hit, but it wasn't really hit hard. And nobody really cared about it too much, it seemed. And all of a sudden, this quarter, lo and behold, who would have thought? They came in and with a much greater loss. Obviously, they were putting a lot of research and development into whether it's the Fire Phone or the drones or building other and, you know, new facilities for distribution. But now we're getting the underlying discussion that you're seeing that there's a lot of disappointment in Amazon. Amazon is just not doing its thing, and it's really been a disappointment in terms of their earnings, and people are giving up on it. Stock was down about 12%.
Big move for them.
Yeah, tremendous move. And we'll see what's happening. It moved down again today. This is after today started off on a good note early this morning. There's some numbers that came out that were mixed. We saw that consumer confidence was the best it was since 2007. And this is, of course, ahead of the big week of economics that we're about to see, which we'll talk about in a moment. And the market started out kind of just moving a little bit up and doing okay. And then all of a sudden, we saw the news headline that Europe was putting tough sanctions, economic sanctions, on Russia due to their, you know, part in aiding and abetting the extremists. So
right.
Now the thing is, when Europe does something like that, you got to perk your ears up because they're usually pretty lame. You know, they just let anything go, right? We know the center of all that is France. They're very lazy at the, you know, pick up. Oh, we'll see how it plays out.
We'll think about it. Yeah, and the French obviously. By the way, the French also got away with a quick one because they had that big deal to sell a ship, some heavy armaments to the Russians, and that was kind of grandfathered out of the so-called sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. That was kind of sneaky.
Yeah, well, it's kind of what they do. I mean, they're always doing something a little bit strange in France like that. But now, here we are, and markets did not take too kindly to that because the idea was that, man, things must be worse than we think at this point. And if they are, in fact, putting up some important sanctions, that's trouble. Well, later in the day, we hear that President Obama is going to make an announcement and talk about something to do with Russia. And he did. They put very significant restraints and sanctions on most of the banks in Russia. And he had some serious words to say about them, blaming Russia for helping the extremists and all sorts of things that are going on. It's interesting because we saw that Russia blamed the U.S. for the Ukraine situation.
Hmm.
How's that? I don't really understand that. But again, just kind of doing a blowhard move.
Now, they're doing the same thing we're doing. You know, making commentary.
Propaganda. It's like, yeah, when I told you I went to Vietnam. You know, here we call it the Vietnam War, right? There they call it the American War.
I never asked them what they called it when I was over there.
Oh, yeah, I said, now tell me about the Vietnam War. What Vietnam War? Well, you know, the American War. That's what they called it.
Huh.
Yep, exactly. And another funny thing, when I was in, what country was I in? I think I was in Cambodia. They told me that Cambodia is a very important country for technology around the world. And I said, really? Do tell. Well, we have a company here called Intel that is a very important technology company around the world that is based in Cambodia. I said, really? Oh, that's interesting. And they said, yes, and also a lot of the consumer staples around the world are from Cambodia. I said, oh. Yeah, and they named a couple of soaps and a few other things. I'm thinking, these people think that they have a facility, manufacturing facility, or some other kind of distribution facility in the area means that it's a company from their country.
That's good news for us.
Okay, so what else we got here? Amazon, we saw that's going on. Have you taken a look at the Fire Phone yet? Have you got your hands on that?
I'm sorry. Oh, no, I have that. I don't think they're out yet.
I thought there was some out. I thought there was, maybe not. I want to take a look at it. I mean, they're doing commercials now on TV. And by the way,
I'm not going to buy one and they won't send me one. So I'm not going to probably ever see it.
Let me tell you a couple of things. Let me give you a couple of things that are bothering me. First of all, it's impossible to watch traditional TV anymore. You know, the days when cable TV had great shows and there was limited commercial interruption because they're getting paid by the cable companies. Remember those days?
Yeah.
Those are no longer, it seems. Not only that, the obnoxious level of commercials is just, I find it incredibly difficult to watch a show. The second thing
I record everything.
Yeah, you have to. The second thing is that in my old cable provider, when you wanted to look at some past shows that maybe were in the backlog where you could watch a few, not a season maybe, but a few shows back, it was kind of easy. Well, I got Comcast. I really thought for a while I wanted Comcast. I did. I really thought, hey, I want Comcast. So now when I go and I watch a show that maybe a season that I want to watch that I haven't watched, and there's a number of shows in there, it starts off by saying, this is a pre-recorded episode. Fast forwarding may not be available. And they have commercials in there. And you can't fast forward through them. I found that really obnoxious.
You can't, wait a minute. I'm you mean on the Comcast device?
You cannot. You can press it all day long. It will not fast forward.
Oh, there's got to be a fix for that. Some hackers fix that problem.
It's unbelievable. I mean, really, it's crazy. You know, you go back and you look at, and then they don't even have the whole season there. They only have maybe four or five shows. So I'm like, wait, it's the episode number four. What happened to 1, 2, and 3? I want to start from the beginning. Not there. And then you have to sit through these ridiculous commercials. Very annoying.
I will say that the number of commercials on cable television, because I watch some of the news channels, they're outrageous. It's like half, generally speaking, on broadcast TV, it's 40 minutes of programming and 20 minutes of commercial. So in other words, you get 2 minutes of show and 1 minute of commercials. This is, the ratio on cable is higher than that. It's got to be.
I agree. It's crazy. But that's unfortunate, but that's what we live with. And then, you know, you can't get around it. There used to be that they would at least, you know, there'd be some stations that wouldn't put the commercials all in the same time that everybody else is putting on, the 20 after, the 22, the 10-2, you know? Now everybody does the same time, so you're just sitting there. What's the point of even changing the channel?
Yeah, it's like a conspiracy. I think it's illegal.
Yep. I think we should start a movement. Now, transportation stocks, you know, those are like the freights, the trains, the trucking companies, maybe UPS and FedEx, the shippers, et cetera. These are important because if you see a good amount of activity, good amount of earnings, it's a good sign for the economy. I think we can agree with that because basically, you know, the more things that are moving around, the more things are being ordered and sold and manufactured and all that, that's a good thing. Well, this is also a part of what's called the Dow theory. Well, you see
I haven't heard of the Dow theory for years.
Yeah. Yeah, the Dow theory talks about the Dow itself and the industrials and the transports, and when they get a signal that both of them are reaching new highs, et cetera, or breaking out, that it is a confirmation to Dow theorists that this is a good thing. You know, this is a solid move that you have all parts of the economy that are moving very well. You have the industrials that are developing, that are selling, that are distributing, and you have the transports that are moving it from one place to another. Oh, that's good. Think about that. Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Now, what's happened recently is it's starting to roll over a bit. We saw that today that UPS came out with numbers and they missed again. They missed, I don't think the last time, but the time before that they missed. It was a pretty ugly quarter.
How could they miss?
I don't know. I guess.
Because UPS is on my block delivering Amazon products daily by the ton.
And FedEx, too.
Yeah, both. And FedEx Home.
And by the way, speaking of FedEx, I remember the days that it was like, hey, I got a good deal. Not a great deal, but a deal. It was like $8.95 to do an overnight mail. It's like $21.
Yeah, no, now the price has jumped way up, and it's now the post office is your best bet.
Yeah. But we have a thing down here. If we send, and you should check this out around wherever you are. You can find this out by asking if you get to your FedEx guy. If we do a three-day express saver in Fort Lauderdale, okay, and I send it to anywhere in Dade, Broward, or Palm Beach, it will get there the next day. and I only pay the 3-day Express Saver rate.
Oh, huh.
That's something good to know.
Yeah, I guess, but that's just like getting lucky.
Well, because what they don't put it on a plane.
Right.
They just drive
it. Well, you know, the original theory of FedEx is to put everything on a plane, ship it all to where, Nashville or somewhere.
And yeah, then the central location, yeah.
And then ship it out. And then somebody said, why are we doing this? In fact, I think that's why the original CEO got a C or a C minus for his paper where he described this architecture.
Did he plagiarize, though?
No, of course not.
Not like the senator. What like is that about? Have you
he's
seen
just
it?
Lazy.
What's with the senator?
Maybe he can't write. Maybe he's dyslexic. I don't know why the guy did that. It's not that hard to write original material. I can guarantee that.
And more importantly, this late in the game, we're talking years, decades later, who's digging this stuff up?
Well, the Republicans are.
Oh, well.
They're running against this guy. I mean, the Democrats do the same thing. But this was a Democrat who was a plagiarist. And there's somebody looking into his background, and they found this paper.
Well, the question is,
nowadays they have a bunch of systems.
Oh, yeah. Well, my son goes to college, and he has to put it in something called Submit It, I think, or You Submit, or Paper Submit. Every single paper that he does, that he writes, he has to put in and put it through this. Instead of just sending it, emailing it, or uploading it to the teacher, right. You have to put it through this system.
Right. And then the system gives it the okay that it's not yet steal it, and which was a real problem when people first started, you know, using these computers in the 80s, because you could cut and paste your way to a PhD.
Well, we did it with the Encyclopedia Britannica, didn't we?
I didn't.
You didn't ever take some of the information and basically just for a paper in school?
Well, I mean, you would take some generalized information and rewrite it, right. But you wouldn't just lift it. I mean, most people don't have the wherewithal to rethink something. I don't know what it is.
You know, when I wrote my first book, publisher wanted to put it through, you know, a plagiarism check. I said, okay, that's fine, whatever, that's good. So it comes back and I get these two hits. That it was found on the web, a similar paragraph or something like that, right? I'm like, how is that possible? So I start thinking about it and all that, and I do some research. Let me take a look at that. So I go out and I look. It was something that I wrote in my blog. That was the same thing.
Oh, you're stealing from yourself.
Anyway. Terry Duffy from the CME, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Now, there's been
this is a very interesting story.
Yeah, talk about this.
Well, apparently what happened was somebody had uncovered these trades that were just clearinghouse kind of. There's a name for that. Wash trade, I think. What is it called?
Yeah, there's a wash sale.
Yeah, there's a bunch of wash sales going on. And Duffy comes out and he goes on about how, you know, what a great operation they're running. And there's no chance that there's anything fishy going on, unlike everybody else. And I don't know. I mean, it just seems to be there's some lawsuit that's afoot that they're going to sue.
Yeah. Well, the big issue also is that the whole idea of flash trading and doing orders ahead of your clients, or, you know, not necessarily individually, but by the machine sniffing out the potential direction of the trade, watching the trade flow come in and seeing that, hey, there's a big order coming in for, you know, this particular commodity, let's say, and then going ahead of it and trading in front of it.
Front running.
Yeah, this is a whole big issue brought to you by the book Flash Boys.
But isn't what's really going on just a substitute for what used to go on with floor traders?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, a floor trader will get an order. I want to buy 10,000 contracts of wheat. Okay, hang on a second. What's the contract price? $2.30. Okay, $2.35. You know, so you buy it on the background, you sell it. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing, but on a much broader basis, and unfortunately done by machines, which could really do a much greater damage to the pricing structure. And this is what was brought by Michael Lewis in his book Flash Boys, which has been a big controversy ever since he put it out, and obviously got the interest of Congress, which is never good. And now they're all starting to testify, and I guess this guy Duffy came in. And he was, I guess, sandbagged in a way by three traders who filed a Second Amendment complaint against him. And the court is alleging that that, backed by several examples, this is a whole organized crime rap sheet and conduct which is thought to be, by the public, a very highly regulated futures exchange. But we know that the largest exchange in the world is the currency exchange. There's no regulation there. Do you know that?
No, I didn't think about it.
There's nothing there. There's no major regulation. There's definitely regulation on the stock exchanges, and there's regulation on the futures markets, but on currencies, very, very little. As a matter of fact, if you were to get a machine and you got some of these charting packages from, you know, there's many companies out there like a NinjaTrader, you get the Forex fees for free because these are currencies that are, you know, basically sovereign currencies that is available to anyone to get the information and to trade.
Hmm.
So there's but you know, at the end of the day, does anybody really think that the markets are truly fair, especially when it comes to futures?
I don't know how anyone could think that.
Yeah. I mean, the guys with the big money rule the deal, right? That's how it works.
Yeah, so they get the bigger money.
And the hope is that you, as an investor, can follow along to the best of your ability in the right direction and make money.
Yeah, you should be able to pick up the crumbs and then get yourself to the point where you're a big investor and then you could lord it over people.
Exactly.
But you have to be pretty flawless.
Yeah, but you know what? That's why when you look at technical analysis and when you're looking at the directional trend of a market, one of the things that you look for is high volume moves on a stock, let's say, or an exchange in a direction, and you see how that's playing out, because you know that the high volume moves, probably not on all situations, but probably when it's market based, is not individuals, but it's institutions. And you right. want to follow along what they're doing. If they're accumulating, follow along. If they're distributing shares, you know, you want to follow along that too. But, you know, that's what they say, don't fight the trend.
And that's right.
That's what institutions do.
And every week you have a bunch of these, it's usually referred to as unusual volume.
Yep.
Which means the stock has been trading within a certain volume range. And then next thing you know, there's a few of these this week. Let's see what we have. Meridian Bank Corp has got unusual volume.
Uh-huh.
Spider, the Barclays cap issuer, C-cap, what? I don't even know what this is.
Is that the one for China?
Spider, Barclays cap issuer, SCD Corp bond.
Oh, no, I don't think
that's corporate bonds.
Yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Alderon Iron Ore has unusual volume. Galectin Therapeutics.
Ah.
Now it has unusual volume, but it's down in the toilet. Looks like it dropped like a rock. So did Galecton Therapeutics, down 60% with unusual volume.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, that would do it.
You know, but at the same time, you look at, you know, if we're talking about market fairness, how about all those times that you have a situation where maybe a major institution or possibly an activist investor comes in, or maybe even a merger happens, and a day, 2 days, 3 days before, there's a massive amount of options activity on the right side of the trade. This happened with SodaStream last week. SodaStream came out with a massive. This is what
they should go after.
I agree. Because there's a multiple factor when you trade options. And if you're going to have a weekly option that expires in 3 days, and you put in $1 million on that option, and the strike price of the stock is 10% higher.
Well, don't you think that it would be the dumbest thing in the world to do? Wouldn't you put in a little further out and take less money off the table?
Yeah, you would. But with the fact that there doesn't seem to be any major amount of regulation that comes down hard, and even on the worst case scenarios, what's going to happen? So they'll make you expunge the money that you made. Okay, thank you. And what? I mean,
there's that.
Yeah, well, so you lose the money that you made. And maybe a penalty. But you know, it's like anything else. It's like, you know, they get away with as much as they can get away with until they can't.
Well, they try to, you know, it always reminds me of Martha Stewart.
Ah, good old Martha. But she, you know, this poor thing, she went to jail for the smallest infraction. And she lied, basically.
Well, she didn't realize that talking to these guys is not a good idea.
Yeah. And then acting upon it, too. But that happens all the time.
You know, yeah, I know it does, but I'm talking about talking to the law enforcement people the way she did without a lawyer.
Right.
That was. If you're Martha Stewart and you're worth that much money, you don't talk to anybody without a lawyer.
Right. Exactly. So Japanese output is falls tonight. We saw the number the most since 2011, and this is due to the fact that the tax that they put on, remember this tax they put on a few months ago, is really starting to choke out the economy, and it's not just a one-month situation that they thought it would be. They thought that, hey, you know, there's going to be a big move on buying before the tax plan is implemented, and that did happen. That was fine. And, you know, we're going to see a slowdown after the fact, only because there was so much bought ahead of all this. But now we're finding that the output has fallen, which means that the demand on the front end is not there, because there's just not a need to get whatever, you know, particular goods there are that they're, you know, selling. So this is interesting because, if you remember, a year and change ago, Shinzo Abe came out with this whole major plan, his three arrows. You know, the first arrow was to supercharge the economy through monetary stimulus / quantitative easing, trying to, you know, break the yen down very significantly, which he did. And then he was kind of come in with some other fiscal, and then third, it was going to be tax. And now he's done all three. The question is, why hasn't it worked the way it should have? It definitely did stimulate the economy. It definitely did bring inflation up pretty fast, especially due to the fact that there was this tax situation and people bought and the prices went up. But yet the economy itself is still not great. Yes, stocks did fine, but still not great. And you have to wonder if this whole move by him has been pretty much just, it was a short-term situation. And they're still mired in a massive deflationary, long-term deflationary spiral that they can't get out of. And I don't know, after he threw the kitchen sink and everything else in the house at this particular situation, if there's anything left that he can do besides give away money.
Well, you know, maybe some of these things. I like what the Japanese yen is at 102. Maybe maybe he should just sit back for a while and see what's going to happen, because with this yen dollar ratio, I think that's the real key to all this personally, because it's going to give the Japanese the impetus to get to do a lot of exporting.
But their export and their exports,
it doesn't make any difference.
Their exports fell in the most recent.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, no sense at all. Imports were really high, which also makes no sense.
Well, unless they're importing from China. I mean, you know, cheap Chinese crap is like very appealing to everybody.
Really?
Well, don't you think? I mean, half the stuff you're buying nowadays, you buy a new camera, it's made in China.
Yeah.
Well, it's not all cheap crap, but I'm just saying it might as well be.
Inexpensive. You know, the other thing is, it's interesting, is that over the last, I would say, 2 or 3 weeks, I'll go back a month, I've been on the phone with various companies to talk to their customer service department for one thing or another, more so recently due to the office move and all that, and, you know, technical support and all that. I can't tell you how many of them are all in the Philippines. I always make a habit, always, for years I've done this, I've said, you know, when I'm on the phone with tech support, where are you located? Trying to understand where the business is going, where the customer service and the call centers are.
Yeah.
And they were in India for a long time. I haven't talked to anybody in India in a long while now. It's Philippines, Philippines, Philippines. And that's exact.
Yeah. Those are mostly Indian startup companies, and they moved to the Philippines.
Well, I mean, I talked to AT&T tonight. They were in the Philippines.
Yeah, everybody's in the Philippines.
So what's interesting about this is, though, I think the bigger picture, when you step back and you look at the transition, you know, we had China as the place for years that was making the cheap devices or the more inexpensive, and that's where all the major companies put their manufacturing. And what happened was that as an economy matures, you get a reaction by the workers that they want more, right? You know, and they should have more. You know, maybe they didn't have air conditioning, maybe they didn't have running water.
Yeah, they want to get a little touch.
Yeah. And what happens is the price of the employees go up. Maybe they want some health care, maybe they want some benefits, maybe they want some time off or sick days. So what happens is that when you get this maturity and maturation process of an economy, in that you're using these workers, and what the end product is, in this economy where we're looking for the cheapest way to, best and cheapest way to spend money in terms of customer service and support and all those kind of things, as well as manufacturing and distribution, what happens is now that country loses its edge. And that's why we're seeing that China, which may sound good on the surface, is looking at a 7.5% GDP number. Wow, that's great. That's not so great compared to where China has been.
No, but sure great compared to what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, GDP numbers are coming out tomorrow. Remember, last quarter, we saw a negative 2.9% print on weather. GDP.
So the weather.
Oh, yeah, of course. So we should be beyond the weather now. We also should be in a situation where we saw some inventory build, and that's good. We saw some better numbers in manufacturing throughout the country in the various regions. The question is going to be, what's going to happen tomorrow? And there's a pretty wide range of expectations for this, and there's some concern that, hey, you know what if we have another down quarter? The official numbers in terms of the overall annualized GDP and the consensus is looking for about 3% overall. That's going to be tomorrow morning at 8:30 in the morning. It's right after.
What's your guess?
I would think that you're going to see a bit of a snapback. I do think that there's been a lot of recent analysts cutting down their estimates. We were at about 3.5% on an annualized basis prior. I would say that the probability is that either you're going to see some ridiculously high number because there's going to be adjustments to the previous that's going to knock it down more, or that's possible. I'll go for about 2.5, 2.6.
It sounds right.
You know, that's with considering all the things that have happened, and I think that analysts have been a little bit too quick to turn over the move from this horrible quarter. And, you know, at the same time, you're also seeing some of the retail sales numbers, and the retail companies are saying, hey, you know what, it's not that great. There's been a bit of a snapback. The good news is that we have employment that's doing better. What, 6.1% unemployment rate right now? Expectations
on bogus, though.
Friday is the number. You're here again. Can you believe that?
Yeah, we'll see.
Expecting 230,000 private payrolls added, 231 total change in non-farm payrolls. Tomorrow morning, we're going to see the ADP numbers. That's on the Wednesday that precedes the official jobs number, and that's the private numbers. Last month, it was 281,000. And remember something, that last week, we saw one of the lowest initial claims numbers that we've seen in about 7 years, 284,000 initial claims. So there is some hiring going on.
Yeah, that is actually the only good sign, is that particular stat.
Yeah, that's very good. We're also going to see that one of the things you see when you see the GDP is going to be the another component of inflation that comes out. And we're going to be seeing that number as well. You look at the personal consumption number, they're expecting 1.9% increase. And the price index in GDP is going to be expected to move up to 1.8%. And that what they call the core is the important one. Core PCE is about 1.9. If you have an economy that's moving and you have better employment numbers, the reality should be that you see some inflation kicking up. So I think you're going to see a big move potentially in gold and silver, depends on how this all plays out. But if we do see inflation and we do see that this is starting to move a bit higher, I think you'll see some people running over to the gold market to pick some things up there. So,
well, let's see, what's gold at now? It's at 1300 even almost.
It's fighting possible. It's fighting that line. It's been
it was that line.
Yeah, it dipped down to about 1285. Then we saw some more of the situation in the Gaza Strip and Israel, and we saw also with Russia, and then a few things around the world that got a little crazy in other areas, and gold started to kind of come up, came up, had about a 2% day last week, and so did silver, and now it's just kind of easing back towards the 1300 range. I don't know if you've been following this. This is kind of a smaller news item, but yet it is something that I think is important to look at. This is about Argentina. Argentina is going to default, it looks like, on its debt again. Second time in 20 years or something.
Yeah, right. I think it is.
And you know what's going to happen? They'll default on their debt. They'll get all sorts of waivers, and they'll get all sorts of levels of ability to kind of refinance or reissue. And you know what will happen? They'll run into those bonds like crazy. What a deal. Probably be at a discount. And they'll be like, what's the chance they go and do it again? So
well, they keep doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So consumer confidence was out. Last thing on economics, consumer confidence was out. The official number from the government today, and it was the highest level since 2007, which is, again, I find very interesting because we're seeing that retailers are kind of posting some questionable results, and we saw that many of the home builders are a little bit on more of the negative side of things for the most part. The biggest home builder we were short, actually, D.R. Horton, through their earnings, they were down about 13% after their earnings. They just had a horrible miss. You know, I think I mentioned this, but they had a 24% cancellation rate.
I didn't know that.
Doesn't that sound absurdly high?
It sounds ridiculous.
I asked some people about this.
Okay.
And I said, you know, is that number right? Well, yeah, that number's right. One of the things that happens is that people go and they buy a house, they try to get a mortgage, they can't get a mortgage, and they cancel. That's oftentimes good news because the company then keeps their deposit. But, you know, at the same time, their margins really compressed. They were trying to do a whole different design and a whole different way of selling houses all in a giant bundle versus split up between different change orders and add-ons and all that. And they didn't do a good job of it, I'll tell you right now. Not at all.
Huh.
The biggest home builder in the country. The Fed's going to be coming out with a rate decision tomorrow, as well as their rate of bond buying. We're at about $45 billion right now. Expectations are for it to be $35 billion and it to finish off entirely in October. Yet bonds, if you look at a chart of TLT, this is the bond proxy, an ETF that looks at the 20-plus year maturity bonds. Take a look at that chart.
TLT, hang on.
Now, you would think that with the Fed backing off, you would think that the economy getting, quote-unquote, a little bit better, you think that with earnings coming in a little bit better, hey, you know what? Maybe bonds and the rates will come up a little bit and the bond prices will go down. Then you took a look at TLT. And TLT shows pretty much a straight line up, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much since January, just straight up.
10-year bond is still under 2.5%. It's good if you're getting a mortgage. You know, you can get a mortgage in, 30-year right now at maybe 4%. Not bad.
No, that's what you want.
Yeah, I mean, if you're worrying about, hey, maybe I should wait a little while and get 3.9.
Don't wait.
Get a mortgage. I mean, at 4% one day, and you're going to have this house for 30 years, let's say, or at least you're going to have this mortgage if you stick to it. And I would say somewhere in maybe 10 years from now, you're going to look back and go, oh, my, look at that rate I got.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's going to be
Unless we go into some sort of reversion, you know.
Yeah, but who knows how much lower, I mean, we said this for a while, how much lower can they go?
I don't know.
We'll talk about inversions, not reversions.
I'm still waiting for the bond collapse.
Yeah, well, I would be still watching the junk bond market, something that I really think that is going to be the first one to go. And if you do see a market correction ever, and you do see some hiccup in the bond market, the junk bonds will be definitely moving. But there's so much money out there just chasing everything, just absolutely everything, because of the low interest rates and because of the quantitative easing, that you just it's very difficult to see behind the curtain what's really going on. Now, Zillow, you know Zillow, right?
Oh, yeah.
Zillow made an announcement last week that they're looking to, or at least some news leak, that they were looking to buy Trulia, which is their main competition. A couple other companies out there. But
there's about five of these companies out there, mm-hmm. but the Zillow's and Trulia are the best of the bunch.
I prefer Zillow over Trulia.
I like Zillow a lot. I use it just to casually look at places.
Yep. So now here's what's interesting. So the announcement comes out, and Trulia is halted. Okay, the news hits and Trulia runs up, it's 10%, it halts. And Zillow's kind of moving along and nobody knows exactly what the deal is and what the numbers are and what exactly is going to happen. But yet, Zillow's starting to move along. And then the news, actual news that this is something that's being looked into. Trulia reopens, it's up like 22%. Zillow's up like 18%. Zillow's up almost as much as the company that they're buying. I was wondering if it would actually get to a point that Zillow would be higher than Trulia, which would be crazy. It got really close. It got within about 2 or 3%, and then it backed off a bit. And then the question was, is this really happening, or is this something they want to do? Whatever. Well, it's really happening. It's about a $3.5 billion deal. And the stocks ran up really nicely, and today they kind of rolled over a bit, about 6, 7%. But still.
Yeah.
We'll see if this – I don't think there's going to be any scrutiny on this on –
No.
Any
no.
level? There shouldn't be, I guess. It's, you know,
no, this will be one of these situations. I can predict this. Over the next 5 years, Zillow will buy all the competition.
Oh. What does Zillow mean?
It means if somebody, I don't know, have no, there's a joke in there. I can't come up with it. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, Zillow will buy all the competition and be the standalone player until Amazon comes along and tries to do something like it. And then it'll be a monopoly and it'll skyrocket. I think this is a good long-term bet.
Yeah, no, I think Zillow is a great company, great design, and they've done very well on making earnings, et cetera. Obviously, it's all conditional on the home market, home buying market. And if things don't go well, well, it ain't going to go well either. Two more things. Inversions. Yeah. You've been seeing a lot of information and news headlines and conversations about
inversions. Yeah, here's what gets me. I never heard of this phrase before. Now it's all over the place.
Yeah, everywhere. It's like a big thing. So what
somehow it got into the public domain as a meme.
Yep, exactly. Let's kind of explain what
inversions.
This is.
It's an inversion. It's stealing money. Be a patriot. Keep your money in the United States.
Right.
Be a patriot. Lose money for your shareholders.
Yeah. Well, here's what's happening. So an inversion is basically when you have company A that maybe is a, let's call it a healthcare company based in the United States, and company B that may be a healthcare company based in Ireland, let's just say, somewhere that has a more palatable corporate tax rate or a very low tax rate. The company from Ireland comes in and merges with the company in the United States, and they change their domicile of where the company is located to Ireland. So now what happens is the tax base for the company is no longer the U.S. It's in Ireland, therefore saving the company and the shareholders and a tremendous amount of taxes that would be paid in the U.S. And what's happening is that you're seeing this a lot with companies because there's hundreds of millions of dollars a year they could save in taxes. This is something that can't happen on a personal basis. You can't just say, you know, I'm moving. You have to revoke and renounce your citizenship because any of the earnings you make on a worldwide basis as a U.S. citizen, you have to pay taxes on. And you don't want to give
it. The point I keep making is that if corporations are people, how can they get away with this if you can't do it as a people, as a person? As a person cannot do it, so how can a corporation get away with it?
Well, it's the loophole in the law is the point, and that's what's going to be discussed and debated in Congress. Because if this gets – first of all, if this gets broad enough – that this happens at a level, first of all, we know that corporate profits that are held offshore are not being taxed as it is. That's a big problem. Tremendous amounts of money from Apple and IBM and all these other companies that are being held offshore, never taxed. Never going to be repatriated either, because if they do, they're going to have to pay tax on it.
Right. So they keep it over there.
The second thing is that if now we have corporations that have to pay these taxes and they are going to be moving their money outside the United States, there's going to be a big hole in the tax collections. That being the case, who do you think is going to end up paying it because the government still has to run?
Right. You.
Me and you. So there's going to be a breaking point somewhere, and you wonder if they're going to go back retroactively and say, well, you know, if you do any business in the United States, we're going to tax you on that as well. It's not going to be where the domicile is. It's going to be the business that you do in the country where you're going to be taxed. That's what should be the rule, by the way. If you do business in Ireland, fine, pay tax in Ireland. If you do business in the U.S. and you sell products in the U.S., well, you pay tax in the U.S.
Yeah, I think that should be the rule.
It seems like a very simple process to me. I don't know why they can't get that going.
Now,
finally,
nobody wants to give Apple a bad time. I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll see what happens there with the. I'm waiting for the iPhone 6. I hope it comes out soon. I can't take this phone anymore. I want the faster one.
Why?
Yeah, because I want the better and the faster one. I have to have it. Isn't that why we get it?
I have a 2-year-old phone. It works great.
Mm. Mine's a couple of years old. I have the 4S. I like it. It works fine. Mm-hmm. Now, here's some weird news. You know Chubby Checker?
Yeah, I see this on the list here. I didn't know about this.
So Chubby Checker has finally good news for him because he has not had a smash hit in a long time. And probably I'm thinking that any of his songs from the past, he's not getting any kind of needle drops or any kind of royalties from, really, in the, you know, it's not being played over and over somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the twist being this song that he, or let's twist again like we did last summer.
Yep.
Those are his two songs.
He settled a lawsuit in which he accused Hewlett Packard of using his trademark name. He trademarked his name, Chubby Checker. Chubby Checker. Remember that name? Chubby Checker. Where they used his trademark name without permission on a software app. This is where it becomes very odd. That purported to measure the size of a man's Hey Nanny Nunu. You know what I'm saying?
A dick.
Now, the question is, first of all...
And it was, I guess it was a chubby checker.
Yeah, it must have done the width as well, I guess. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
A chubby checker. Why do they call it chubby? Now, here's the thing. First of all, how much could they have paid? I don't even know. But where is this software app, and who in God's name is using this?
I never heard of this. And what software app? What is HP? What do they make that they have anything to do with apps?
Let's see if we can find the chubby checker app. I'm doing a little search here.
What was Hewlett Packard doing with a product that measures size? That doesn't make any sense. This whole story is just nuts.
It's all over the place on CNET. It's on.
Yeah, I think it's a hoax.
Really?
Well, that's what I'm guessing. It's good publicity.
Chubby Checker. Reuters. He can sue HP over genital measuring app. The app began in a. It was for sale. Oh, it was for sale in 2006. It purports to estimate the size of a man's genitals based on his shoe size. Why? Yeah, I don't understand. This must have been in some kind of mass buy that HP did on a company that had this thing buried somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
You know what his real name is?
No.
Ernest Evans. 71 years old.
He's hanging in there.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm trying to find where you can get this app. Oh, here we go. Apps on Google Play, maybe. I don't know. You think we can get the Chubby Checker? Maybe. Let's see. Searched Google Play. Chubby. Let's just go Chubby.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be on Google. I think it was when HP had that phone, that alternative operating system phone of some sort back in 2006.
What was that?
Didn't they buy Palm?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They had their own phones, and they tried to do this and
There's
that.
There's a lot of chubby apps, I must tell you, on Google Play. You got Chubby Chip, Chubby Penguin, Chubby Bug, Chubby Superhero, Chubby Fat Run, Chubby Fish.
How does anybody make money? There's very few people making money on these apps anymore. There's too many apps.
There's an entire page of chubby apps.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, this guy, I'm just saying, he should go after all these. Chubby Pizza, Chubby Gang, Chubby Chicken, Chubby Ninja. Can you imagine how much money? We need to represent this guy. Chubby Cherub.
I don't think he owns the sole rights to the word chubby. I think it has to be Chubby Checker.
I can't believe that he got a trademark on that.
What did that name derive from? Chubby Checker. It came from somebody
else.
Here
it is right here. There's a penis size calculator on the Android apps.
Really?
Ever wonder what your friend or boyfriend's penis size is? Yeah, I'm going to look this up. Let's see if it's still here. Maybe they took it away. Yes, it is right here. It's by Trust Mob Tech. How to measure. Let's see this. We got a little music back there. How to measure. To estimate your tool size, make the distal flange, the little one in the ridge, your index finger on the screen. Press it down. Use humor and index finger. Also called the pointer finger. Have fun. Drag the pointer finger distal flange on the screen until it matches your own. Press repeat button. Estimated tool, 8.8 inches. A crowbar, a perfect level, and an excellent weapon. Nothing can resist it. Oddly, we got some reviews. Here we go. From D. Bryant. Oddly, this is pretty accurate. I guess you have to do it right. It says about 6.8. I'm a little over 7. Yep, perfectly normal, perfectly healthy. From Corey Sparks. The 9-inch it gave me is spot on.
Girls.
Wait, let's find one that doesn't like it. It's not accurate. I'm 7.5 and it says I'm 15.36. Not accurate. I'm 16 and it says I have a 17 when I have a 7.5. Here's one. Only goes up to 34.5.
Ah, drawback. Only goes up to a yard.
Oh, gosh. All right, let's talk about some stocks here. You know, we're going to talk about the stocks that are on the list. I have one pick for today. You probably would have guessed where I'm going on this one. But this is a game that we play. You can find all the information on DH Unplugged. It's under the weekly stock picks area. And John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz & Company, clients may own positions. We'll duly note that if that's the case. And, of course, if you do decide to invest in stocks, risky business, go seek some professional financial advice. And don't take advice from two guys that are given to you free on the radio.
What happened to my fresh market?
Where'd it go?
It was doing fine, and now it's down.
Earnings. I think it was the Whole Foods. I think it was the Whole Foods market. I got to look at what happened there. It definitely fell off there. But yeah, I agree with you. It was doing pretty well for a while there. Your big one is still, you made some nice money. American Apparel at 5.5%. Royal Bank Shares of Pennsylvania. That well-known bank with the incredibly long ticker. 17%
up. Call on Herbalife.
Herbalife, I shorted that again. Herbalife actually today came out with earnings. Remember something that last week, Ackman was on TV giving his presentation, crying and tearing, getting emotionally attached to this whole issue that this is a terrible, terrible situation. This company's awful and they're taking advantage of people and I can't stand it. It's my duty as a human being to break it. And the stock went up 25% in his face. I still believe that if this stock is playing funny business with some of the things it's doing, that the company probably was in there buying it themselves, propping the stock up to make Ackman look like an idiot. That's what I think. Now, meanwhile, the company comes out with earnings today. After last quarter, they guided higher and they missed dreadfully, and the stock was down 13.5%. There you go.
Yep.
Now, your Puma Biotech, this is an interesting story. So you missed being stopped out by about $2. The day that you entered, this is the stock that was up, 300%, and you decided to short it, and the stock moved right up until your stop, and it was about $2 off, and you kind of held on to it. You were up about 7% at one point. It moved up about 12% today, but and you're only down 2%, which is nothing for this mover, right?
No, it doesn't look like it. Well, it's a good thing I put the 15% on it.
Yep, exactly. But we have some red in here. Web.com, I thought it was going to be a buy, and it's kind of, you know, after it was down, I don't know, 25%, not really picking up. Vertex Pharmaceuticals, we'll see how that moves tomorrow. It did have earnings today. American Apparel is up about 5.5%. Silver Wheaton and Southern Copper, nothing. Pandora, the short there that you picked, up about 1%. Select REIT Income, I don't know why that's down, but that's down 4.5%. Franks International, which we found so much about last week, up about 0.7. And the old ones that are hanging on is Ruth's Hospitality up 7.5%. DaVita up 3.5%. El Paso. Acorn still the winner at up 29%. And what's going on in your neck of the woods in terms of insider buying and things that you would like to possibly see on the list?
Well, I'm a little concerned about the way the market looks at the moment because it keeps fumbling with the 17,000 mark. I was thinking it was almost on its way to 18,000, and then it fumbled. There's a couple of companies I was looking at. There's of all of the crazy ones, one of the directors of AT&T bought himself a potload of stock, which seems weird.
That's interesting, by the way, because there was some interesting news today.
What was the interesting news?
Well, a company called Windstream, which I have currently still an account with that I can't stand. As a matter of fact, I'm canceling them at the end of the contract. They're holding me to my contract through October.
Yeah.
And so I called them and said, listen, I'm going to be canceling this. They said, okay, please send us a letter. I sent them a letter. I said, we're going to be not renewing and canceling as of the end of our contract in October. So I called them back a couple of days later. Said, yes, we got that, sir. Okay, good. So we're good. No, sir, you have to send a cancellation letter on the date that you get it canceled. Don't send it before, because if you send it before, there's going to be some penalties. I'm like, wait, so I got to time this out exactly right? How does this work? Well, a couple of days on either side is fine, but you need to cancel it by then. They said, sir, why are you canceling? I said, because you guys suck. Awful. I mean, you can't even get to these guys. But what they did today was they're splitting off some assets and developing it into a REIT. Stock was up like 20%, and several of the other stocks in that industry, in the telecom, really moved up on this news.
Huh. Well, maybe I'll just go long on T.
Okay, we're going to put T here. I'm going to go long on T.
Yeah.
And this is, we have the insiders buying this again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What else you got?
There's nothing else that really excites me.
No? Well, I'm going to go short Twitter.
Yeah, I think that that's a good idea.
But I'm going to do it at 52.85. I think that right now it finished at, I don't know, 49, close to 50 after hours. It hit, I think the high was like 52.50 or something like that. It hit right up into the area where I thought there'd be resistance. But yet tomorrow you'll come in, and of course there'll be that spillover effect. And who knows if they're going to try to really blow out the shorts at this point. But still, you have a level about 52.85. So I got about $2 or $3 till it gets there. So I feel pretty comfortable with that. And so we'll short. If it hits there, we're going to put what's called a limit order in. So it's going to hang in there until it actually hits. And once the limit hits, that 52.85 on a sell tick or a buy tick, or trade tick, we'll call it, that this will actually go live. So if it hits 52.85, we're in.
Oh, it will eventually.
Yeah, potentially. We'll see. But yeah, the market, I do think, also is going to be a little jittery. We have a lot. It's going to be very, very noisy over the next few days. With the Fed testimony tomorrow, with the GDP number tomorrow, with the jobs numbers tomorrow and Thursday and Friday, and the big one on Friday. End of month coming, window dressing on Thursday. Lots happening in the market. You'd probably see a nice bid into the morning hours tomorrow, depending on a few things around Russia and Israel. And into the 2 o'clock time period when we're going to see whatever goes on with the Fed. I think it's, what, is it 2 o'clock or is it 12? Let's take a look. The Fed's rate decision is at 2 o'clock. Everything's at 2 o'clock tomorrow.
Hmm.
Actually, the Fed's at, you know what? They're at $35 billion right now. I correct myself. They're looking to go down to $25 billion. And only...
The buybacks?
Yeah, the Fed is buying the bonds. There are $35 billion, right, which consists of $20 billion of treasuries and $15 billion of mortgage-backed securities. They're going to drop it down, as expectations are, for $15 billion of treasuries and $10 billion of... mortgage-backed securities. Only $10 billion. Just a mere $10 billion per month. That's not, what's $10
billion? Nothing.
Nah, it's nothing, $10 billion. It's ridiculous. $25 billion. Ugh, nothing. Not even exciting. All right, so we got that in there, and we will end it here, and I will talk to you next week.
All right, sounds like a winner.
All right, see you then.
Adios.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.